From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The weather report in Oklahoma often comes with something a little different these days. It comes with an earthquake report. And well, it should. The earthquake count in Oklahoma has jumped from single digits annually to many hundreds of magnitude 3.0 or greater. The place is shaking. Experts are looking at the oil and gas industry, which doesn't much want to talk about it, but we will this hour on Point, the earthquakes of Oklahoma. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Oklahomans, are you shaking right now? What is going on? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's just a little clip from last June. Earthquake hit not far from Oklahoma City. A morning television meteorologist on ABC affiliate KOCO reacting here on air.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. This is live on air. That was way bigger than what we just felt earlier. That was well over 4.0 magnitude. I can tell you that much right now. Let me finish this forecast, and then, forgive me, it actually scared me. That's how powerful that one was.
And on life goes, sort of. Joining me now from New York is Rivka Galchin. She grew up in Oklahoma, writes now for The New Yorker magazine. Her latest article is headlined, Weather Underground, the Arrival of Man-Made Earthquakes. And it's all about Oklahoma. You can link to her story at our website, onpointradio.org. Rivka Galchin, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Now, we've pointed at the numbers a little bit, but they almost sound unbelievable. Can you walk us through what the upward curve of frequency of 3.0 magnitude earthquakes in Oklahoma has been in recent years?
Yeah, I think it actually is very difficult to imagine, and the numbers are both illuminating and in a sense, too big to grasp. Because, for example, this weekend, there were more than 10 earthquakes over magnitude 3.0. And to get a sense of that, of course, 5 years ago, there was one per year. And most people living in earthquake-prone areas, not every part of Oklahoma is shaking, but the people who are living in the areas where it is shaking say, we hear it pretty much every day. Often it's a sound. It's not just a feeling. You hear a boom.
585 last year, up from one or two or three as a typical number in years past. I mean, by one estimate, they are now on track to have over 700 or over 750 earthquakes this year. Is Oklahoma gripped with this at this point, Rivka? Are they looking the other way? Can you ignore it?
I think that's an interesting question. And you know, they talk about there's always the story of the frog put in boiling water, hops right out. But the frog, where the water comes up in temperature slowly, doesn't necessarily hop right out. And I think that Oklahoma is somewhere in between those two frogs, because the rate has been increasing so dramatically. I think 2010, 2011, 2012, it was building. But in 2014, by the end of the year, the rate was five times higher than the beginning of the year. I think that rapid change has brought a little bit more of a sense of crisis.
What is driving this number? What's going on?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing to be clear about, and that it's a problem in Oklahoma, it's a problem outside of Oklahoma, is this vague sense that fracking, which is this word that just sounds evil and that, you know, it kind of scares people, is responsible for it. And that's not an accurate sense of what's responsible for it. So it turns out that however you're getting oil out of the ground, whether it's more conventional methods, whether it's fracking, you're pulling about 9 or 10 barrels of water up for every barrel of oil. And that water is not drinkable water. And it has to go somewhere. So where it's been going for the most part, it's being injected back underground. And that's what's causing the earthquakes.
So there's a lot of hydraulics here, as in water moving around, not necessarily attached to fracking. In fact, in Oklahoma's case at this point, you report not overall related to fracking, but they're going after oil that has more water in it by far than Oklahomans went after a century ago and for many years thereafter. Why? Because this is what's still available.
this is what's still available. And also, you know, technology always comes. It comes with something good. It comes with something bad. You can fly, and then you fly too close to the sun, and you crash. But at the same – and so they have developed recently dewatering technologies that have made it economically more feasible to handle a lot of water coming up with the oil. And so on the one hand, that was very exciting. And on the other hand, it turns out to be a big part of the problem. And one thing that I think is very frustrating for people who are in the know in Oklahoma is that there are disposal wells that don't appear to be causing earthquakes because they're located not right next to a fault. They're not drilled down too deep. And so if there could be more acknowledgement of the problem within industry, they could still hold on to the processes that they're using without causing so many earthquakes. I think the denial is preventing a kind of quite sensible response that wouldn't be economically devastating at all.
And we've heard plenty of that, I guess. This was just this week. This is Kim Hatfield with the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association telling CBS News no definitive link between the oil and gas industry and the increase in earthquakes.
Coincidence is not correlation. This area has been seismically active over the eons, and the fact that this is unprecedented in our experience doesn't necessarily mean that it hadn't happened before.
Oil man really essentially saying there, this is coincidence. Rivka Galchin with The New Yorker, Oklahoma raised. Please stand by there in New York. I want to go to Katie Karenin. She joins us right now from Ithaca, New York. She has taught for some time at University of Oklahoma, now up at Cornell. Katie Karenin, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You hear the oil man there saying coincidence, coincidence. Is there more than coincidence here in the oil and gas activity and the rise in earthquakes in Oklahoma?
So there is. We know there's definitely a mechanism where if we put this fluid into the ground, the fluid and the fluid pressure move toward the fault zones, and they can prop that fault zone open and basically lead to slip along the fault. And so we've done pore pressure modeling to show these pore pressures created by the fluid that's being injected are high enough to be triggering these earthquakes. And so while there definitely is the correlation, and we look for that, there's also a causal mechanism.
Tell us the story. You were in Prague, Oklahoma, not so many years ago. When you were at University of Oklahoma, you were set up with your students, as Rivka tells the story, to measure the effect of Oklahoma fans at a football game stomping and what that might produce. And instead, you got a really significant earthquake. What did you measure? What happened in Prague?
Yeah, so we took the instruments out, you know, instead of being in Norman, and took them out to Prague after an earthquake on Friday night that was near a 5.0 magnitude, and we put them into several yards, and we measured the aftershocks of that earthquake. On Saturday night, there was a magnitude 5.7 earthquake, and so we measured that one as well with stations in really close sort of vicinity to the earthquake, and we ended up with a beautiful data set of the aftershocks and where they're occurring within the fault zone. And so we were able to measure sort of the depth, the locations of those earthquakes, and then the aftershocks as they continued for days and months afterwards.
And at this point from that, I guess, and other data, is there any doubt that this is related to pushing all that wastewater back into the earth?
So I think if you look at the whole system within Oklahoma, all of the earthquakes, all of the wastewater disposal that we see happening, I don't think within the scientific community there's much doubt at all that there is a link between the water and the quakes.
Rivka, is that scientific community, confidence reflected in the conversation in Oklahoma about what's going on?
I would say it isn't yet, and I think there's a few reasons. The leadership, the political leadership in Oklahoma has, I would say, obscured and just they've tried. You know, it's interesting. I've never done a piece where I'm so sort of upset. I think Katie's been working in the field, and she's very level-headed and understands that it's not the scientific work is having a hard time being kind of acknowledged by both industry and politics in Oklahoma. But for me, I find it quite overwhelming, maybe partially because I'm from Oklahoma. So the political leadership has obscured this and continued to obscure it. And I also would say that industry, which I would like to point out, is full of people who are very educated on these issues, have also obscured it. Also, there are two main newspapers in Oklahoma. There has been some good coverage of this, The Tulsa World in 2015 did a long, in-depth investigative report, which was top-notch and I think is really changing the level of knowledge among Oklahomans that this is not a sort of interesting open scientific question, but something that can be said with quite a bit of certainty is happening. But, for example, the Daily Oklahoman, the thing you'll hear again and again is that they hired three new energy reporters and nary a discouraging word has since been heard about the oil and gas industry in Oklahoma. And it's therefore, when you talk to Oklahomans, most of them have a sense that it's an interesting, scientifically open question, which is absolutely a mischaracterization.
Maybe it's tolerable, Rivka. Maybe, you know, you shake a little bit. So what is the cost of doing oil business?
That makes sense. And I think that definitely for a few years that was the sense, and that could be a reasonable decision. You would just want that decision to be made with a full sense of the kind of risk-benefit analysis. And it seems like a major part of the information that would go into a risk-benefit analysis way of thinking about it has been lacking. And then the other thing that Oklahomans who are following it have stressed to me as I was reporting the piece again and again is that this is a classic case of, you know, the profits that are coming from this are going inside of industry, and the risk is being borne collectively by the Oklahoma citizenry.
Literally right under their feet. Rivka Galchin, who grew up in Oklahoma, has written about all of this very compellingly for The New Yorker. You can link to her article, Weather Underground, at our website, onpointradio.org. Grew up in Norman, Oklahoma. Katie Karenin taught in Norman at the University of Oklahoma. Now she's at Cornell, and with us today, the little Toby Keith to take us out. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
That old burns hot till the old burns out. Pump Jack, pump a little more. His daddy's cut it thin at the general store. And a gentleman's dime don't float that long.
Hey!
Pump Jack, pump before my good name's gone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sound of a big oil jack pumping near Medford, Oklahoma, behind us right there. We're talking today about the earthquakes of Oklahoma, big surging numbers, heavy oil and gas production, and a whole lot of shaking going on in that state, up from single digits a year over magnitude 3.0 just a handful of years ago to 585 in 2014. This year, we're told, on track to exceed 750. Rivka Galchin is with us, grew up in Oklahoma, writing now for The New Yorker. Her big piece, Weather Underground, The Arrival of Man-Made Earthquakes, is in the April 13th edition of The New Yorker. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Katie Karenin is with us from Ithaca, New York. She's at Cornell now, but was at the University of Oklahoma, has done a lot of research on what's going on underground there. A little sound of some of that. Here's an Oklahoman concerned with earthquakes at his house. He's at a town hall meeting last summer trying to get some answers on who, if anyone, might be held responsible for the quakes and damage.
Cracks in the house and the bricks and stuff. We moved there 2 years ago, and it's got more cracks in it now than what we moved into. And we just like to find out what's going to happen and who's going to be responsible for it, if anybody is.
And the numbers just go up of earthquakes. The Oklahoma State seismologist Austin Holland has been cautious about publicly describing a link between wastewater wells and earthquakes. He was at a town hall meeting in Edmond last summer, saying he's not sure what's causing the higher magnitude quakes.
No previous cases of induced seismicity have come anywhere near to the order of magnitude of number of earthquakes we're seeing or over the geographic extent over which we're seeing them. So this is truly unprecedented, whatever we're looking at.
And here's the Oklahoma governor, Mary Fallon, talking with Tulsa World, the main paper in Tulsa, saying it's nature.
At this point in time, I don't think we have enough information to truly understand what is causing earthquakes. We know a lot of it's just natural earthquakes that have occurred since the beginning of time.
Just natural. We'll look at that. Let's hear from Oklahoma. Brandon in Oklahoma City. Thank you for calling, Brandon. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I actually had an experience whenever I was attending Oklahoma State University a few years back. There was a big football game between Oklahoma State and Kansas State. And at the end of the game, there was a large earthquake. And I wound up talking with one of my friends who was an engineering student at OSU, and he had a job lined up in Arkansas, and he would be fracking. And we started talking about the increase in earthquakes in Oklahoma, and I'm not from Oklahoma, but I started reading about them and saw that there was a dramatic increase in the number of earthquakes. And so we got more into depth in the conversation.
Yeah.
And he refused to say that there was any connection between fracking and the earthquakes. And I said, well, you know, I don't know what data is out there. And he kept saying there's no data that connects it. However, these earthquakes have only been happening since fracking has begun.
Brandon, let us pick it up. There may be some issues of semantics here. When you think about water going in as part of the whole oil production thing, you go and gas, you go to fracking pretty quickly, but we know now that water is a big part of pumping it in is a part of just getting rid of wastewater as well. I mean, Katie, can you describe what happens in fracking and how that might or might not be related to hydraulic fracturing, related to earthquake incidents, and what happens in the wastewater, the forced injection of wastewater that's come up with more typically pumped oil or gas and then pushed back into the earth? What are the impacts on what we don't see underground, Katie?
Sure. So hydraulic fracturing is a process that only lasts for a short period of time at any given well. And it's a small volume of water that goes in. And so it's under very high pressure, but it's a small amount. And, you know, you do it and you're done.
It opens up all the fractures in the stone that release the oil or gas and out it comes.
That's right. And so, I mean, there are cases, rare cases of earthquakes directly linked to the hydraulic fracturing process itself. But this massive increase that we've seen is, you know, instead due to kind of the longer-term process of using wells to continually put fluid into the same place at a lower pressure, but it goes in sort of in a sustained way over years and builds the pressure slowly over a very large area where you're more likely to encounter these faults and start to prop them open. And so it's, you know, linked into these hundreds of earthquakes is actually the wastewater disposal rather than the hydraulic fracturing itself.
So way down beneath the surface, and you tell us how far down, where is this wastewater, how deep is it being pumped, and what exactly happens there underground?
Yeah, so it's often about, you know, 2 kilometers would be, you know, a common depth at which these are going in. It depends exactly on the area, of course. But basically you have the well, the water is put into the well, then it gets to the subsurface. You could think of it as somewhat like a sponge. You know, it's not just solid rock. There are spaces. There are fractures into which the water goes. So as the water goes out into the formation, it starts to sort of build up pressure slowly as you put more and more water in. And a pressure front migrates away from the well bore. And so over some growing area in the subsurface, you're raising the pressure at depth. You know, you could, you know, raise pressure when you fill a bike tire. Mm-hmm, you raise pressure mm-hmm. in the subsurface as you put in the water.
And is it possible that we're just entering a new relationship with seismology here, that 3.0 plus quakes are just going to be seen as the price of doing oil business in Oklahoma?
You know, I think that's a decision, of course, for the people of Oklahoma to make. The concern would be, for me, whether or not there would be larger earthquakes that could potentially be, you know, either more damaging or of a greater hazard to the people within the state.
Let's go to Mike in Dayton, Ohio. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hey. We've actually known that injection of fluids for disposal has caused earthquakes, and we've known it for 50 years, ever since it happened out at Denver, Colorado.
Are you in the field, Mike, geology?
I am a geologist. I work in a different field other than earthquakes, but as part of my education, we had to study this particular case study. Out in Denver, there used to be the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, where they manufactured nerve gas. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when they were doing that, they generated quite a bit of very toxic water. And rather than try to treat it through a plant, they came up with an idea for deep well injection. Now, there's a lot of faults near Denver, but they haven't been very active, and so there's only a very occasional earthquake out in that area. But in 1962, the Rocky Flats Arsenal drilled a hole about 5 miles down into some very deep fractured rock and started injecting their wastewater under pressure. Shortly after that, we started seeing earthquakes in Denver, and some of them got to be reasonably decent size. People could feel them. Then there was a strike, and the whole plant shut down. And, of course, they quit injecting waste as well. The number of earthquakes started to die away. Once the strike got settled, they had to go on double shifts to try to make up for the nerve gas production. So they got a lot more water to get rid of. they increased the pressure on the well, and the number of earthquakes shot up very dramatically.
Mike, I appreciate your call and that history. I want to get on it with my guests here. Katie Karenin, our professional geologist out of Ohio, says we've known this for 50 years, but we just heard the tape of Governor Fallon in Oklahoma saying a lot of it is just natural earthquakes that have occurred since the beginning of time. What do you think about that assertion from the governor?
So clearly, we have known for 50 years that you can induce these earthquakes. In Oklahoma, there have been earthquakes. We've had historical earthquakes that created fault scarps in the subsurface, clearly not related to oil and gas. So what we're looking at here is sort of the rapid rate. We've never seen these numbers of earthquakes. We've never seen earthquakes of this magnitude happening this commonly within the state. And so it is unprecedented. This is not what's been happening through time within the state. And so with due respect to the governor, this is a change.
Katie Karenin, please stand by. And Rivka Galchin with The New Yorker. A.J. Farhadi joins us right now from Oklahoma City. He's Vice President of Regulatory Affairs with the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association. A.J. Farhadi, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. You hear geologists saying in this hour, this is about oil and gas production and forced injection, water disposal. Does your group dispute that, Mr. Farhadi?
Well, I think what I would say is that to paint with a broad brush might be something that we need to take a step back from. We need to take a look at this and continue to study it. I'll say a couple of things. Mm-hmm. There are over 144,000 Class II injection wells in this country, approved by the EPA or a state program that is approved by the EPA.
And you're talking about injection for getting rid of wastewater.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And of these, we've had a handful, less than 20 wells, that we have been able to say and target that this well caused seismic activity. Now, when you look at the scale on that, I think that there's something to keep a wary eye on. And so going through the scientific method, I think, is appropriate, just as Dr. Karenin has continued to do. But I can also tell you that there are a number of scientists and geologists within these companies that I meet with on a regular basis, I can assure you, are trying to understand this and, where necessary, trying to develop new practices to prevent anything that would or could potentially lead to a seismic event.
You had single digits of earthquakes of this magnitude not very many years ago. Last year you had 585. They're talking about 750 plus maybe this year. I mean, at what point is it important to do more than keep an eye on it, Mr. Farhadi?
Well, I don't think that certainly we are keeping an eye on it, but I think that we have made a lot of steps. For example, our industry has been significantly involved in improving the fault map that the Oklahoma Geological Survey uses here in Oklahoma. So we have participated in that. We have worked with the Corporation Commission whenever called upon to provide data. The Corporation Commission here in Oklahoma regulates oil and gas activity. And even as recently as 2 weeks ago, they did a request that all orders involving injection wells assure the commission that they are not in basement rock and properly injecting into the Arbuckle Aquifer. These are significant steps that are being taken, and I can tell you that none of my producers have complained once about having to take any of these steps. They've complied and agreed with any step they've been called upon to follow.
Rivka Galchin in New York, that's a bit of a different picture. What I got from your piece is a description of an oil industry kind of smothering this conversation and avoiding taking all the steps that might be taken here, Rivka.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, the oil industry is diverse, and there are many different companies, and some of them are, of course, behaving more responsibly than others. But I will say that I just want to state clearly that what I just heard, I would qualify as gaslighting. I think it's just very misleading. For example, we know there was a study, a nationally published study that was out in Science. Actually, Katie Karenin is one of the authors. It identified four wells as being responsible for at least 20% of the seismicity in Oklahoma. So there you see a clear example. No, you don't need to shut down all the wells. No one in science has ever said that. Certain wells are poorly located, and I'll tell you how many actions have been taken on those wells. No actions have been taken on those four wells. And that's the kind of thing where I just think when you look in the detail as opposed to the quote-unquote broad brush, you again and again find, oh, there were clear actions indicated and they have not been taken. Now, is that the fault of industry? Is that the fault of regulators? I think that's a nuanced question. I understand that industry would not, why would they say, ask something of themselves that's not being asked of them by the law? That's a sort of a separate issue. But I also think they have a ethical responsibility to take note of the actual science that's there. The people who work in the industry are very educated, and they definitely understand it. They know that the fact that everywhere on Earth is technically, seismically active at some very low level is a misleading thing to point to in the case of Oklahoma. They also know that it's not just that the same earthquakes are going to be, we're going to keep having twos and threes and fours. They know, because they have the education in geology, that everyone with an education in geology knows these earthquakes are going to get larger and more destructive. And I think that should be their emphasis. I think that ethically is what is called upon.
Katie, Rivka points to four wells as having a pretty significant role here. Nothing's happened with them. How much of these hundreds of earthquakes can be drawn to such a small number of significant wells, Katie?
So there are a small subset of wells, many that have been drilled more recently in the past several years, that are injecting at larger volumes than have been done sort of in the decades prior. And these wells, just because of the amount of fluid that they're putting in, have a disproportionate effect on the sort of pore pressures in the subsurface and then likely on the numbers of earthquakes. And so, you know, this is happening. Our study really focused on the area near Oklahoma City and faults close to fault zones there. The area up north has very large wells that are likely tied to these earthquakes. And so it's kind of the cumulative effect in the subsurface from all of the wells injecting into the formation. But the wells that are putting in the most fluid likely have that disproportionate effect. And, you know, to me, that would certainly be one way to start to address some of these problems, in addition to pulling back from basement, which the gentleman from the OIPA mentioned. I think another
being the very, very deep level of rock.
So, yeah, it's basically sort of the strongest layer of rock. It's below the sedimentary layers where the oil and gas typically is itself. Mm-hmm. It's not the layer that we want to inject into. We want to put it into shallower levels. But if it gets down there, it can get into the faults and cause some of these earthquakes. And so we can avoid that. You know, that's a good step to take. So I certainly appreciate that being done. And we could also stay away from faults that are known. Some we don't know about. That's more difficult. And so creating better fault maps is important. But some are very obviously there, and yet there are active wells right next to them.
A.J. Ferrati, other states in the vicinity of Oklahoma have taken more regulatory action. Is it time for Oklahoma to step that up, to look at these four wells and maybe close them down, move them?
Well, I guess what I would say to that is, first of all, we do get a lot of questions from members of the legislature that are traditionally oil and gas supportive, but they do ask us many questions and scrutinize and really do search us for answers. And that includes even the governor's office, who has called some of these natural. But I think that, again, I don't believe she was probably speaking to every single one of these events if I were to try to speak up for her.
Do you worry about your own home being, damaged by earthquake?
Well, I actually do live in Edmond, which is an area that actually does have some seismic activity recently. I grew up in Seattle, though. I'm familiar with these. I'm used to them. I also recognize that we have a much firmer rock than occurs in California and most of the West Coast, Washington State, where I grew up. So, I don't really have an alarm or concern having experienced them. Now, I can understand those not having experienced them in the past, having some concern, and I think that's valid.
A.J. Ferrati with the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association joining us today from Oklahoma City. Thank you, A.J. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the earthquakes of Oklahoma, big surging numbers, heavy oil and gas production, and a whole lot of shaking going on there in Oklahoma. Big numbers now, up from single digits just a few years ago. Now 500 plus last year, 700 plus we're on track for this year. And people saying, scientists saying, it's forced injection of water deep underground where maybe it should not go that's leading to this. Just December, protesters stood in the rain outside a packed public meeting, voicing concern after the Pedestal Oil Company proposed six new wells just south of Lake Hefner in Oklahoma City.
We need to know!
No more fracking! Come out here!
You can't drink oil, one said. Here's a protester in December talking about those wells.
You can't drink oil and you can't eat gas. We don't have another place to go. We messed this one up, we're through.
And when they're big, it's tough. Sandra Ladra, injured by rocks falling off her fireplace during an earthquake in Prague, Oklahoma, a couple of years back. Here she is.
It was a long time before we could come back home, and to this day, I still don't feel safe in my house.
She's not alone in that. Rivka Galchin writes it all up very compellingly in The New Yorker. Her big piece you can link to at our website, onpointradio.org, joins us from New York. Kitty Karenin, long at University of Oklahoma, now at Cornell, is with us today. She studied this very closely. Let's hear from our listeners, Aubrey in Oklahoma City. Aubrey, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment that the people of Oklahoma generally are kind of in the know that this has to do with the fracking industry. Every now and then you'll talk to someone who works in the gas industry, which there are a lot in the city here.
Sure.
That kind of conditions their answer about, you know, the earthquakes with, you know, hemming and hawing a bit. But I think the general population seems to be very aware that there is a connection, and we kind of roll our eyes at the politicians who give these pandering answers about it not having a connection or being coincidence.
Aubrey, do you have the sense of your fellow Oklahomans thinking something has to be done about it, or is it something that Oklahomans are willing to tolerate to keep the industry engaged and happy?
I think it goes both ways. There's a level of tolerance. We here have so much experience with the extremities of nature that earthquakes just kind of get rolled into the whole experience of, you know, tornado season and everything else that goes on. We get used to it quickly, and we're not so fazed by the experience. You know, the tornado sirens go off and we walk outside to see what's happening. But there's another part of it that, you know, this is so new and it is so different that there is a growing amount of fear and concern. And all it would take is another big over 5-point earthquake to cause some real structural damage to really get people lit on fire, is my view.
Aubrey, I really appreciate your call from Oklahoma City. A lot of people responding online. Doug says, it's the politician guys. Seriously, cash being made, so of course it's not drilling. Quake NATOs are something to experience, Doug says. Kevin says, there isn't a day that goes by where you don't hear about an earthquake here in Oklahoma. There was a time when that was once or twice a year. Rachel says, we put up with oil industry. That doesn't mean we're clueless. Terry in Brewstertown, Tennessee. Terry, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Over 2 years ago, I watched a documentary about earthquakes in Arkansas. There were over 8,000 earthquakes in less than 3 years that had not been much activity before that. And when they finally got them to shut down part of the fracking for almost a month, the quakes dropped off to almost nothing. And the people that are pro-oil, let them drink and bathe in oil and see how long that lasts. They're messing with the water. We have other sources of energy.
Terry, I appreciate your call. Rivka, you've looked around at states that have changed their regulatory practices to deal with seismic activity that was seen as related to oil and gas production. Can that be effective? What about in Oklahoma?
It has been very effective in Arkansas, in Kansas, in Ohio, and in Colorado. As the caller mentioned, they had experiences where wells were poorly located. Maybe they didn't know that ahead of time, although in Arkansas there was indication that it was a bad place to put a well. And once this was quickly acknowledged and responded to by the appropriate authorities, and in Arkansas, for example, they drew sort of an area in which you couldn't have disposal wells because it was an area that was likely to cause more earthquakes. That was in 2011. And so we see that this can be responded to. And I think a really important point that I just want to make sure is very clear is it does not involve sort of saying bye-bye to oil and gas industry in Oklahoma. It would be a very basically, in some senses, given the scale of the oil and gas industry, in some senses, quite minor adjustments that would continue oil and gas exploration and not lead to these high levels of earthquakes. And so I just think that that's really important, that at the scale of the oil and gas industry, the kinds of changes they would need to make in terms of certain wells are not going to work out, other wells are going to work out, are really not that big, given the scale of the industry. And they would not have to sort of say, no more oil and gas industry in Oklahoma. So it would be really, in a sense, a minor shift.
And
but
what,
it would have to be led
and what did you see
by the regulation.
What did you see in terms of readiness to change regulation or even to candidly discuss the issue in your reporting, Rivka?
You know, I sort of think when you report something, you know, in a sense, everyone I met and spoke with was a pleasure to speak with and very nice. It's only sort of when you step back that you say, oh, the very small measures that the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, which is basically the people who really have the power to change things on this issue, they have the most power to change things on this issue. The steps that they took on March 26, 2015, are the kind of steps that were indicated in 2010. So they have still not taken any steps to reduce volumes of disposal. They have had very few actions that they've taken on specific wells. They have gotten slightly better about issuing permission for a brand new well in locations that are obviously bad. But these are slow. I think it's great that something happened on March 26, 2015, and also at the end of 2014, something happened, but it's so much slower than every other state. And each time I think it has followed, and I think this is positive, it's followed a very big town hall meeting or it's followed a big investigative report. So in a sense, it's been an uptick in individual Oklahomans having a forum in which to express themselves that have led to the small, albeit real, changes that have happened.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Angela. Angela, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I grew up in Oklahoma. I actually lived there for about 25 years, starting in the mid-70s, and I never experienced one earthquake, ever. And so looking at my home state right now, it's a little scary, but I will point out that in the 1980s, there was a huge oil boom. A lot of people made a lot of money, but then when that oil boom fell out, a lot of people lost their livelihoods. And you have to look to the people of Oklahoma right now, because I think they're afraid that, you know, with fracking and these sort of consequences, they're afraid that the boom that's going on right now in Oklahoma is going to fall out again.
If they get tough even on what's going into bringing on these earthquakes. Angela, I appreciate your call. Rivka, you're saying it doesn't have to mean job loss. Katie Karenin, do you agree? I know your specialty is geology, not necessarily the oil business, but is there a practical answer to dealing with this wastewater that comes these days with the oil that would not mean job loss?
So I think the goal definitely is to find, as Rivka suggests, small changes that can be done to basically dial back the wells that maybe contributing the most or in the poorly located areas so that we can continue to, you know, develop the economy, have the livelihood within Oklahoma, but still do perhaps a better job of, I'm always concerned about basically protecting the population in terms of hazards. And so achieving that right balance is critical. I think with the level of science currently done, you know, we do have the knowledge that these are related to the wastewater, and so it becomes a critical issue to address. And so it's not saying, you know, we need more study, but the studies that we need to do right now are to isolate, what are the biggest problems and just address those so that the rest can continue.
I want to go to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Angela Spotts. She's been in the thick of this. She's activist, co-founder of Stop Fracking, Payne County. She's giving a presentation on this issue tonight at the University of Central Oklahoma. Just before 9 o'clock last night, there was a 3.1 magnitude earthquake about 6 miles from where she lives outside Stillwater. Angela Spotts, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me and covering our story. And I really appreciate Rivka and Katie for all the important information they're giving the national viewers.
Is Oklahoma having a full and frank conversation with itself about this huge spike in earthquakes, Angela?
No, I don't think it is. I have been following this a long time, and just so the viewers understand, we've had 249 plus threes this year. 30 in the last 7 days, the first week of April, we had 30 over threes, 10 fours for this year. So we're on track for 900, and those of us that are watching our homes break literally apart and before our eyes, that economic is going to be a large impact in this state. Our bridges, our trains, the infrastructure is being impacted. So I know that the OCC is making these steps, but they've been very slow to make them. Everyone says at the OCC that they are not really able to do much more than what they're already doing. They say it's up to the governor. The governor doesn't come to any of the events or will even discuss this. We have been warned. The larger ones are coming, and we're seeing them. So it's this study and keep a watchful eye is not acceptable. How many of us are going to lose our homes while an industry continues to control our legislature, our governor, and those that have power to change it?
Well, is that clear, Angela, that this is a matter of a government that's being restrained by energy industry ties?
I do believe so. I think all of the pieces from the Tulsa World to Rivka's to the New York Times, there is certainly a perception of conflict when you have David Boren with the OGS underneath him and Harold Hamm and the money that is spent. I think the OGS needs to be removed from under the university. I do believe
this is the Geological Studies Department.
Survey.
Correct.
Correct. And I don't think people are really looking at the economic impact of what's going to happen. I mean, I kind of joke it's going to be a wasteland. There are people who can't afford to have the engineers to structurally evaluate their home, much less repair it. How are you going to repair it knowing the next day you're going to have another earthquake that may very well be the bigger one that takes down the wall? I'm watching cracks that have just appeared in my brick in just the last week. So it's a much bigger economic issue. And also, the numbers that are actually involved, I'm one in five or six. I mean, there are one in five or six that are connected to the industry. That makes four or five of us not connected to the industry.
One in five or six jobs indirectly connected. Rivka, what about insurance, home insurance in this environment? Is it covering damage from these sort of nonstop quakes?
Many or even most of the insurance policies in Oklahoma are excluding induced earthquakes from their coverage.
Induced, what portion of this 500 or 700 does that mean? All, most, some? What are the
probably,
insurance
companies? Probably most of them. And then, of course, it becomes a legal issue. I think it actually will split the legal issue, interestingly, because before there was so much pressure to call each quake natural, but the insurance companies are going to have so much pressure to call them not natural. So, but, you know, again and again, it's one of those things. People are very intimidated. I'm intimidated. I'm trying to file my taxes. People are intimidated by scientific language. They're intimidated by contract language. It's pretty easy to give people a bad deal. I know it would be pretty easy to give me
on
a bad
insurance,
deal.
Yeah. You read it and you don't know what you read. Todd in Amherst, Massachusetts. Todd, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing up this very important concept. And I also wanted to point out the idea of wastewater and how I think that's kind of a misnomer. Basically, the water that they use in the hydraulic fracturing is mixed with a lot of chemicals to make it more slippery than silicone, and more able to be injected into the ground and get to the fractured gas. And so it's not necessarily wastewater that we're leaving in there, but rather a much more slippery substance that we're simply leaving in the bedrock. I was wondering if you had anything to contribute about that.
Todd will pick it up. Of course, Katie, again, you're saying hydraulic fracturing not out front on this. The water that is pumped back in, Katie, is it drinkable, safe at all? Does it get? I heard an aquifer mentioned. Does it get near drinking water supplies? Is it a threat in that way, Katie?
So these are injected pretty deep. These are definitely below the aquifer. There are thick shales above them. I think, you know, that is not the focus of our concerns at this point. It's really the earthquakes that are being generated. In terms of the hydraulic fracturing, there is some involved here, but for the most part, the vast majority of the water that's being disposed in central and northern Oklahoma is formation water that comes out of the formation and then is reinjected elsewhere. And so in certain parts, you know, in Ohio, for example, a lot of the water being injected is a combination of formation water and sort of the fracturing water itself. But it's a little bit of a different story in most of Oklahoma.
Let me ask you, Katie, you talked about the potential for larger quakes. Do you see the series of quakes as raising the odds of a bigger one? How much bigger or more destructive? And I know you're a scientist, but what about the morality of not dealing with this now?
So, I mean, that's certainly the concern that I have and I think many scientists have is a bigger earthquake. When we look at population statistics of earthquakes, so how many threes there are for how many fours, you know, in tectonic settings, we have a pretty good feeling. You know, it's often 10 threes for 1 4, 10 fours for 1 5. And so as we see the number of threes and fours increase, basically we look for larger quakes. We know we have large faults in Oklahoma. We have fluid pressure rising near those faults. And so that's what we're watching and trying to understand the likelihood of a bigger event coming.
Will you all help us understand these incredible numbers coming out of Oklahoma, now the nation's leader in number of quakes, surpassing California. Katie Karenin, formerly at University of Oklahoma, now at Cornell University, with us from Ithaca today. Katie, thanks for your work and your time today.
Thank you.
Angela Spotts with Stop Fracking Payne County, with us from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Good luck and thank you for joining us, Angela.
Thank you very much.
And Rivka Galchin, who grew up in Oklahoma, terrific piece in The New Yorker. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Rivka, in New York City, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to our listeners. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.